truly happy because your attention is not where it belongs. They should be wanting your stuff. You shouldn't be wanting their stuff. And they do want your stuff, but they just don't let you know about it.
They want to turn you into servants, servitude. They want you to work for them all your life.
They want you to punch a time clock. And now they want to look at your pee. They want to look at your body fluids. They want to control what you do when you're off site. They want a complete lattice of control.
Perhaps another one of the conspiracy's most greatest accomplishments in rewriting history was the so-called Emancipation Proclamation, where they, quote, did away with slavery, unquote. Well, anybody in their right mind knows that the only difference between old-time slavery and present-day slavery is that present-day slavery is timeshare slavery. And, you know, back in the old days, the old form of slavery was actually more expensive. You had to pay for that slave. You had to provide that slave health care. You had to provide that slave food. You had to provide that slave clothing. And yet, what do they have now? Slaves who go and work for them at least 8 hours a day, oftentimes more. And those slaves buy their own food. They buy their own clothing. And they even have to pay for their own health care. This is outrageous. And the moment that you're no longer an efficient slave and you're no longer capable of producing the necessary quotas, then you're let go and replaced with a new slave who jumps into line looking forward for the opportunity to serve them.
I might also add that you're let go into an abyss of economic uncertainty, but still with the basic needs that have to be met, and your recreational needs, or your recreational drugs, or what have you. So you end up being criminalized. You fall into the extensive prison system, larger than the population of many countries, and there you are a slave again. Only now you're not being paid, or you're paid such a small, contemptible amount that it might as well be nothing. It's just as much a kick in the slats to your self-esteem. So, of course, you want to stay out of the prison system. You want to stay out of the medical system. You want to stay out of the legal system. You want to stay out of any system. And the conspiracy is the greatest system of all, the greatest time waster and the greatest ball breaker that you'll ever encounter toddling down the pike.
Never fight the system. That's what they say. We say the only good system is a non-system, a system that's been systematically destroyed from the inside out. And that is why many sub-geniuses have their so-called con job. We're in positions usually having to do with computer networks, nerds, people who are right at the epicenter of the control centers. And when it hits the fan, who do you think is going to be throwing the switches?
This is true.
Yes,
you'll
that's
notice
right.
Many subgeniuses have jobs in things that seem not very subgenius at all.
Food service.
In the government. In legal.
School crossing guards.
Healthcare.
Garbage collecting.
Things that seem not so slackful, but yet they keep going.
Mechanics. Mm-hmm. But how many of them are lawyers? Well, that's not a position of that's a prestigious position, a subgenius. Why would they want to be a lawyer? Go look in your phone book. A typical phone book, let's say it has, 200 pages. I'll bet you 60 of those pages are filled with lawyers. 60 pages for lawyers. And yet if you turn to the section on mechanics or garbage collectors...
One page. Yep. Fewer pages than
you are so preaching to the choir.
And yet, how long can society last without garbage collecting? How long can society last without food preparation? How long can society last without mechanics to keep the cars running?
Well,
and then we have to ask ourselves, how long can we last without the lawyers? Forever!
At the moment, the conspiracy is trying to destroy these civil bonds of society and place all against all, because it's found that desperate people are even better customers than the self-satisfied cud chewers that used to be their prime source of revenue.
And this is the thing, the one thing, that the reason the conspiracy wants your slack, and you touched on it, is that slack cannot be bought or sold. True slack has no monetary value.
Unfortunately, it is a motivator, and the conspiracy also knows this. And that's why they present their false version.
They try to actually badmouth Slack. They try to make you afraid of Slack. I mean, 10 years ago, we were saying real Slack meant quit your job. And yet now they've turned that around on their heads. They want you to feel the worst thing in the world that could possibly happen to you in today's modern age is for you to lose your job.
And I do believe it was Ivan Stang who said that the worst thing that can happen if you quit your job is that you'll find a better one.
That's him. He's right over there.
And yet, even within these conspiracy ties, we've managed to get our little wormholes within their little systems. The moment that it becomes hard to get a job, we've managed to extend unemployment insurance for another, 13 months?
Mm-hmm.
They can't get rid of us. They keep trying. They take one step forward, but they go two steps back.
Because, let's face it, there is no aspect of life, no phase more rewarding than that involved with being the highest example of evolution, an art bum.
Ah, the art bum.
The art bum.
I love subgenius art. I have seen such great things. I have right here a Bob-marked...
Pinball machine
with planets and saucers and a nice message on the back that says, if you see this man, kill him. Subgeniuses have a special kind of art, an art that is completely incomparable to what the conspiracy would call art. Subgeniuses often will be walking works of art, walking a pure slack in an artistic form. Their very appearance and movements and voice are art itself. But the conspiracy will never see that because they can't package it. They can't market it. They can't figure out how to control that which is mutant art. This conspiracy shuns the bulldada. They laugh at it. It is ridiculed unless they can make a trend out of it and the hipsters will buy it.
The conspiracy doesn't like real art because it shines a little light and shows just a portion of the fraud of the conspiracy. But let's be real. Genuine art comes from pain. It does not come from a desire to decorate your living room with a Thomas Kincaid painting, which comforts and cheers until the next few seconds when you forget about it for the rest of your life. The being of art is therapeutic. You do it because you need, in some subconscious way, to right the wrongs that have been done to you. And ironically enough, it's often the conspiracy which is producing at a remove this pain. So in a way, you could even thank the conspiracy for being the fountainhead of art, just as the Jews could thank Hitler for preserving the Polish, the synagogue that he wanted for a museum of Jewishness. So it was saved, you know. It's like with friends like that, who needs enemies? It was in Prague, actually, and still is.
Well, once again, the essential difference between art and entertainment is that art fires off some of those synapses in your mind that actually engage and thinking art, whereas entertainment is just sort of stimulation for stimulation's sake. But the conspiracy knows that if you don't use it, you will lose it. And that is why their entertainment has so little real art. They don't want you to fire off those synapses. They don't want you to think. They want you to lose that ability to think.
They want you to lose and snooze. They want you to be just enough awake to order the special order that you can order at this time only.
Can I get you to move ever so slightly?
And while we're pontificating about art, I'm going to advance the controversial view that good art entertains. Yes, I know this is blasphemy because art exists for the artist and so forth. Well, as Gertrude Stein said, the bad artist suffers just as much anguish and agony as the good artist, and then at the end is still a bad artist. No, you should unbend a little bit as an artist and try to make your work appeal to somebody, not to everybody. Not everything's for children, and not everything's for everybody, as R. Crumb said. But it should be directed towards somebody. It shouldn't be masturbation, like bad art. but it should have some recipient in mind. There's going to be someone out there who appreciates it.
I would believe that sometimes even if you design or imagine your art just for yourself, that someone must appreciate some reference of the same thing that you appreciate.
And like that mental masturbation, you don't want it all to just be wasted. I mean, that's almost like mass murder. You want there to at least be a chance that one of those little modules of your satisfaction might lead to a greater satisfaction for future generations.
Papa Joe Mama's Jesuitical training always shows through. Yes, in principle, I agree with that as well.
We must keep these sorts of principles deeply embedded in our subconscious on extended vacation type events like this.
Well, it's important not to let it just wander away at the end of its tether.
And this might be the appropriate time to promote the latest addition to the Subgenius merchandise branch, which is the Connie and Dobbs Head condoms.
I'm sure everyone's seen those, or have they?
Testing. Oh, my gosh, I'm on.
Yes,
the Dobbs and Connie condoms are over there. Oddly enough, there are more Conniedoms than Dobbsdoms.
Why wouldn't
they're
you
only want $2 a piece. We're selling these at a tremendous loss. We do this as a head of health concern.
These are not disposable condoms, though,
health.
Reverend Stang. That's why they have to be $2
spirit.
Each, because if they were less than $2 each, you might throw them away after using them. But with the Subgenius condoms, they're actually suitable for freezing.
I'm really disappointed that the Connie condoms have sold less, because I have here all the time the males in this church talking about how much they want Connie on their schlong.
Well, they're not just
they
for men,
talk,
too. I mean,
they
these
talk a
female
Connie.
Condoms.
They're just trying to be politically correct.
You may want to use these for all sorts of appliances.
I hate to say it, but Connie's face on a Dobbs product is the kiss of death. Sales-wise. I'm not sure why that is.
It's because
I guess
Connie
people
doesn't
want, they
have
like
one
Playboy
face.
Better or something.
Well,
it
no,
depends
Connie,
on what way that which direction the face is facing.
It really comes down to this. This is something that is sort of ingrained in our minds and not on a conscious level, but there is no one face for Connie. Connie is every woman. And by every woman I do unfortunately mean every woman. Connie is the angelic, sort of cherubic beauty, such as someone like Pantera. Connie is the buxom, loud-mouthed, crazy woman, such as myself. Connie is the space goddess princess, like we. Connie is any number of the women you see here. We are all facets of Connie. And trying to nail down just one side of Connie on any... just an item. That is, it doesn't do it justice.
Yes, the side is not the... Oh.
Ironically, there's a little bit of Connie in everyone and everything except for conspiracy.
No.
And that's enough of that. That's a little of the Church of the Subgenius hour, but... unfortunately, that's all we're going to hear of that today. Coming up next on Free Radio at 101.1 FM, freakradio.org, it's your favorite show, Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. Stay tuned.
In the land of Minnie Mouse and Mickey, things are getting icky since the municipality of Orlando, Florida passed a moratoria against feeding hungry people in their city. The mayor said with a scoff, we'd all be better off without these food terrorists lurking like a shark. So he did declare, Samaritans beware, no more feeding hungry people in the park. And if you do, you'd better raise your bail, 'cause you'll be fined $500 and sent to jail. Yes, if you do, you'd better raise your bail, 'cause you'll be fined $500 and sent to jail. There are many things you can do when you're passing through that are much more acceptable than that. Go on amusement rides, eat things that are fried by each one of your kids a little hat. You can stay in a hotel, act like everything is swell, go to SeaWorld and hear the seals bark. But whatever else you have in mind, you will be in a bind if you feed the hungry people in the park. And if you do, you'd better raise your bail, 'cause you'll be fined $500 and go to jail. Yes, if you do, you'd better raise your bail, 'cause you'll be fined $500 and go to jail. Yes, you can drink some wine, have yourself a good time, have a good vacation, then retire. But if you want to stir up trouble, if you deign to pop the bubble and try to feed the hungry people of the Shire, in such a public place, we can't suffer such disgrace, though the logic may seem a little stark. What would the neighbors say? Where will the children play if you keep feeding hungry people in the park? So if you do, you'd better post your bail, 'cause you'll be fined $500 and go to jail. Yes, if you do, you'd better raise your bail, 'cause you'll be fined $500 and sent to jail.
Yeah, that was David Rovics, the Ballad of Lake Eola Park, about, of course, the Orlando Food Not Bomb struggle. About 30 people arrested, 29, I think, actually. No more arrests in the last couple of weeks, but that's in Orlando, Florida, where Mayor Buddy Dyer is taking dire action against the anti-poverty group Food Not Bombs, which believes in making poverty visible. And in doing something about it, both in terms of immediate feeding, encouraging people to learn how to feed themselves, embarrassing politicians by exposing the existence of poverty in such towns, and creating a lot of publicity around the issue, particularly more when the police and the mayor cooperate by calling in the reinforcements to arrest people for serving free food, which, of course, happened in Santa Cruz 20 years ago, happened extensively in San Francisco also during that period. And you would have thought some of those city councils and city administrators and police departments would have learned their lesson, the huge amount of negative publicity that's created by this stuff. But there's really this sense of the, overwhelming, overarching, I guess it's arrogance that the... Some cities have. Florida, I guess, is one of those places. So I'm going to play a little more music, and then I'm going to get into the regular show. A lot of interviews today, some updates, not a lot of special interviews, so this could be your opportunity to call in and get interviewed yourself. A call-in number is 831-427-3772. I'll be right back.
Oh.
as if you didn't know, because I certainly didn't. That's last night's vice. I call it an emergency stand-in while I hustle about securing some more appropriate information and irritable material here. Actually, I've got it. I just have it completely keyed up. It's called Lock and Key. You just listen to Perfect Little Noise is the name of the group. And again, Last Night's Vice is the album. So for the next couple of hours, for those of you who are newcomers here, this is a local radio show. We try to focus on particularly local poverty issues, issues of political and police abuse, and local, hopefully, activist opposition to that kind of stuff. You can, as mentioned before, be a part of the show by calling in 427-3772-427-FRSC, because we are indeed free, or freakradio.org. And we will chat, particularly if you have something to say about either what I'm playing on the air, talking about on the air, or something breaking news, or something you think that's sort of at least somehow related to civil rights, or perhaps an announcement you have to make about something upcoming in the next week in Santa Cruz that might in some even distant way bear on the subject matter of the show. So the airways are all of ours, or they should be, and that's what free radio is about, and that's what my show is about, too, although, again, I tend to focus on local civil rights issues. I've been talking a lot more recently about smart meters and the opposition to them. This is a conversation I had at the farmer's market, I guess it was yesterday, with a smart meter opponent. Also, I may be playing a little bit from some of the smart meters, stop-start meters. I think it's stopsmartmeters.org. I could be .com. And it's some really interesting videos, claims by the smart meter opponents about the health problems, the accuracy problems, the safety problems in terms of fire, the privacy problems of smart meters, not to mention the public process problems about how the companies involved are ignoring public opinion when, for example, locally, the county of Santa Cruz, various cities in the county, but not Santa Cruz itself yet, under the mayorship of Ryan Coonerty, have declared smart meters not wanted here. And there's a struggle going on. You're going to hear more about that in just a moment. In fact, right now.
I'm down here at the farmer's market on July 27, 2011. Still a fairly warm day, about 525 at the smart meter free zone. Although, are we really smart meter free here? I can't be sure. Can you? Pretty soon, there isn't going to be a square inch of Santa Cruz that is free from smart meter radiation if we don't do something about it. We're talking with
Jeff Nordahl.
And Jeff, I passed by this stand you have, which has a Wise Up to Smart Meters handout and a large placard, Smart Meter Free Zone, with a no smart meter kind of cross over the smart meter, no cancer meter here, Stop Smart Meters Org. And the first question you asked me if I'd signed up for the...
It's the PG&E delay line, and PG&E is not telling people about this, but you do have the right to call into PG&E right now and say you do not want a smart meter, and they will put you on the delay list, at least for the first round of installations, to buy yourself some time to do more research, and hopefully we will pass some laws that will give us all a permanent opt-out solution.
The number is?
The number is 877-743-7378.
One more time.
877-743-7378.
Now, unfortunately, I don't think I asked my interviewee here the really pertinent question about whether the PG&E has actually stopped putting in meters at those places where folks have called in that number and said, hold up. And, it's all very well to say, give us time to do that and so forth, but we have to know exactly what's happening. And I'm not sure that I've got that information yet. So if anyone, by the way, has more information on this issue, feel free to call in if you've called PG&E and said, I don't want no stinking smart meter. And they've said, hey, okay, we're about to come by tomorrow, but we've decided against it. I'd like to know if that's the case. Alternately, if the opposite happened, if somebody showed up the next day, that would be of interest. And I'm sure of interest to the activists who are at stopstartmeters.org.
Now, what if you weren't smart and you are already got a smart meter being smarter than you or making you seem like a dummy? What can you do then?
There are a number of options. The first thing we recommend is call the mayor and city council.
Mayor Ryan Coonerty.
Ryan Coonerty here in Santa Cruz City. You can also, if you're in the county or Capitola or Watsonville, you can call your local county representatives and mayors. And I just found out I'm not actually an activist, but I was speaking with a council member, and they said they usually do not take a matter seriously until they receive 20 emails or phone calls. So if you just make a two-minute phone call, you don't have to say anything eloquent. You just have to say, I don't want a smart meter on my house. Please do something about it. Pass some laws. File with the CPUC for an opt-out solution for all of us. They will put that in their spreadsheet that another person called, and it might get on as an agenda item, and then we can really do something about it.
We hope. Now, 420-5020 is the city council number for those who feel like doing that, 420-5020. However, one wonders if this will have any effect because, as you know, Watsonville, Capitola, and the county have already outlawed or whatever, made some kind of laws against smart meters. But that's not stopping the smart meter people from installing them or the sheriffs from arresting people who are trying to assert their right to be smart meter free.
Well, I'm going to share a sad reality right now. Is even though a lot of the local governments here would like to enforce the ordinance, as soon as, let's say, the county of Santa Cruz arrests a smart meter installer, the danger is that PG&E would then turn around and sue the city or county for damages.
Heavens!
Thus, potentially bankrupting the city in a matter of seconds.
We can't do anything. We must succumb to the fury of the smart meter. Don't you agree?
Well, unfortunately, in this day and age, it's not a matter who's right or wrong. It's a matter who has the most money to pay attorneys. But there is safety and power in numbers, and right now, all throughout California, there are a number of counties and cities who are joining together in a united front and filing petitions and protests with the California Public Utilities Commission, who actually does have the authority to control PG&E, and we right now are trying to force PG&E to give an opt-out solution for customers that is free, and also, ideally, an opt-out solution for all communities, because one person without a smart meter surrounded by five homes with smart meters is still being bathed in radiation 24 hours a day.
A person who gets a smart meter installed in their house, are you saying, I guess they could get it uninstalled themselves if they want?
That is an option. There are electricians in this town that are willing to pop on an analog meter back onto your house. An analog meter can be bought from a number of local vendors for about $40, and a licensed electrician can do the replacement for probably about $100 worth of labor. So it is
about $150.
Yeah. And if somebody is having health issues or the smart meter is seriously affecting you and your home, we highly recommend doing that.
So at the moment, however, I was hearing that you've been present at some of the attempted blockades out at 38th and or the 41st in Portola.
38th in Portola, yes. Right now,
morning at 7:30, there was I told on the weekdays, there were folks saying, hell no, you don't go.
Yes. Basically, and we were holding up the current county ordinance that actually banned smart meter installations till the end of 2011. We were asking the police to enforce the ordinance that is now on the books, but the police the first day actually were not even aware of the ordinance. The second day, they said that they had orders from above, that they were not to enforce the ordinance, and that if we disrupted Wellington Energy from installing smart meters or blockading, that we, the protesters, would be arrested.
How long has this protest gone on now in terms of the its blockade aspect here in the Santa Cruz County area?
The blockade actually started about 2 weeks ago. Wellington Energy now is in full swing. About 35 trucks are leaving every day, estimating about 1,000 meters a day are being installed in Santa Cruz right now. But what we really need, if you're interested, is go to stopsmartmeters.org, contact them to get on the list. You can go down to 38th and Portola every day. There are going to be some people there, so we highly recommend getting a firsthand look.
You were there this morning?
I was not there this morning. I was there last week, all week last week. Last night I went to the city council meeting here in Santa Cruz, and we're trying to get more numbers down there because...
How many showed last night?
City council, it was... Not happy to say it was only 3 people there with the smart meter issue. Although I go canvassing in neighborhoods, and on one day I talked to 70 people on their doorsteps, 69 of those 70 people said they did not want a smart meter. Only one person was indifferent and could care less. Basically, they wanted me off their doorstep.
And how many people, those of 70 people, actually had smart meters already installed?
Luckily, in my neighborhood in Seabright, none of them. Although a few weeks ago they did install in Cayuga. So Seabright is now on radar and probably will be attempted to be installed within the next week, 2 weeks here. But if you call the delay line, and if we get enough people to call the delay line, they may just skip over areas of Seabright.
And again, the delay line number is?
And the delay line number is 877-743-7378.
How many people have been arrested in this smart meter protest?
I believe just within the last few months, I believe 3 people have.
Here in Santa Cruz?
Yeah, it was here in Santa Cruz. I know at 38th and Portola, 2 people were arrested. And I believe... I'm not sure where the other arrest took place.
What charges are they facing?
I think it was, I don't know what the actual charge is. I think it's blocking or disrupting. It was standing on a public sidewalk.
Criticizing a smart meter operator?
Yeah, it was, exactly. And trying to actually uphold the ordinance and the law that is on the books.
We've been talking with?
Jeff.
And, Jeff, you may be calling into the show 6 to 8 tomorrow night and giving us even more details.
Would absolutely love to. And it's the more you learn about this topic, the more enraged people are getting. And I'd really like to mention that a lot of the data there is showing that smart meters and the wireless transmissions that they do are potentially carcinogenic. The World Health Organization just declared wireless non-ionizing radiation as potentially carcinogenic. So keep in mind, a smart meter will be on your house for the next 20, 30 years.
And on your appliances, perhaps, as well.
Yes. So you are going to be bathed in radiation 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You can't turn it off. And PG&E, even though it's now been declared a possible carcinogen by the World Health Organization, PG&E is saying they have the right to mandate every single person putting this on your house. On the wall next to your baby's bedroom, they think they have that right, and there's no health warnings whatsoever.
PG&E knows best. Thank you, Jeff. Hopefully you'll be calling in with more info. We'll try to get some smart meter person to, shall we say, tell the real truth behind your vicious lies here today.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Jeff.
Cool.
But unfortunately, the only thing I could find, again, this interview was garnered yesterday on short notice, looking through the Internet, there doesn't seem to be much in the way of articulate proponents of smart meters. They just kind of install them anyway. There is some argument from PG&E-ish type sites that... there were problems with misreadings and overcharging because they were newly installed and hadn't yet learned how to be read properly or some such thing, which, you know, could well be true, but that's only one of about 5 concerns around smart meters that I've heard, one of them being dangers of fire, another being the much-touted health dangers, in terms of experiments with, rats and other animals. The third danger being the issue of privacy, that the constant registering of your energy usage is an intrusion into your home. Fourth being public access and so forth. There's a lot of concerns about that. And it looks like we have a caller calling in. Maybe we'll hear some. Maybe PG&E is calling in to correct our misimpression. But it looks like the caller has stopped calling. Caller, call back. You can do it. You're tough. You're rough. And it just happened. I just happened to turn on the bell right now and notice you. So do call back, because callers are the spleen, if not the heart, of our show. So 427-3772 is the call-in. There has been some interesting stuff posted, again, by critics of smart meters, notably on the website stopsmartmeters.org. There's a long article by Joshua Hart, who I guess spoke on this program about a week ago, along with his comrade in arms. I believe her name is Heidi. Do I have that right? Or is it Courtney? I'm not sure. In any case, we had a couple of opponents of smart meters talking. The green sheen wearing thin, how corporate environmental organizations are providing cover for the mounting ecological catastrophe of the smart grid. And that's sort of an expose of the Sierra Club's support for smart meters. Some Sierra Clubs, I guess the national rather than some of the more local groups that are now opposing smart meters. And I found an interesting, it looks like it could be an interesting, San Francisco condo building fences off smart meter installer submitted by Amy O'Hare. But let's take this caller first. Hello there, you're on Free Radio, caller. Who are you?
Well, it's your buddy, Bob, here.
Hey, Uncle Bob, how's it going out there?
Robert, what's your antagonism against smart meters?
Oh, I'm not really antagonistic. I'm just trying to present issues. I'm having a hard time getting a person in favor of smart meters. Perhaps you're the man who can defend them properly.
Well, what is a smart meter?
Well, that's a very good question. I believe it's a new form of registering and sort of billing energy that involves, I guess, microwave spikes every second that are sent out to a registering agency that are installed in your home, that even ultimately may be installed on your appliances.
Now, microwave spike. First of all, you can't have a smart grid without smart meters, without smart endpoints, right? So the whole point of smart meters.
So you are a defender of smart meters, correct?
I'm a defender of smart meters. Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
I think it's one of the more absurd, ridiculous, Luddite issues to arise in recent history. As to microwave radiation, the ether is filled with radio waves, Robert. Mm-hmm. It's a radio transmitter that transmits periodically. It's a much more current, modern method to read a meter than sending some person behind your house to visibly read the meter. It saves time. It saves money. It's much more accurate. They can offer various tiers of electrical service. And if we expect to be able to hook our cars up to the grid, we can't do this kind of stuff without getting smart at the endpoints.
Anything else?
I don't get it. I mean, radio waves are everywhere. Mm-hmm. If we're going to be paranoid about, people were paranoid about electricity plugs 110 years ago or so. They thought that the electricity was going to come out from the plug, right, and haunt them or do damage to them. The trade-offs are so significant with electricity that most of us agree that the benefits so far outweigh whatever costs there might be health-wise, which are extremely minimum unless you put your face in it. Mm-hmm. or stick a couple of wires in the electric plug and enjoy it yourself, which is why we have child guards and stuff for electric.
So, Bob, as I understand it, then your general criticism of the smart meter opponents is that radiation of this sort already exists. This is sort of a fearful, primitive, opposed to progress kind of analysis or fear that smart meters save you money. They're more accurate. and they are going to be necessary for electrical service in the future that involves things like...
You can't have a smart grid without smart meters. It's a proper step. There's nothing particularly unusual about it. We're moving in a direction of trying to sense activity on bridges and all this stuff, and the ability to transmit
I understand.
Wirelessly is quite the development, which has been around for what? Marconi was 1890 or something.
Right. I understand your argument. I think I've tried to summarize it fairly succinctly. My problem is that you're not dealing with a person who's well versed in this issue. In fact, you know, I would invite you to come on the show and debate this with someone who is, because I think that would be a very interesting debate. I was looking online for such a debate and I couldn't find it. And in fact, people should know that on August 3rd, there is a town hall meeting coming up in Santa Cruz around that issue, which I guess it's going to be held. Let me take a look here at the. Hang on a second here. I think it's mentioned on indiebay.org.
Every website I've ever seen these people cite is a bogus, non-scientific, non-technological,
What I'm going to do now is I'm going to play some of the, what I found relatively interesting arguments by two activists who are speaking about smart meters critically. We're talking here about... let's see. Well, I think these folks will identify who they are. I think we're talking about Joshua, and I believe it's, what I'd like you to do, Bob, Joshua Hart is his name, is to listen to his rap.
Cellular wave transmissions are microwave. This thing about microwave.
I know. You keep repeating that, Bob. You keep repeating that, and I understand the point. You know, and I don't. I know the claim by opponents is that it's quite different to have microwave radiation of a sort of a constant sort for a period of time and have spiking radiation every few seconds, which they claim.
Minimal.
Wait a minute. Hold it, Bob. Whoa. Which they claim has been shown through various, I don't know if you've looked at their research. I have not. Maybe you have. I've looked at their research, which tends to, you know, show cancer-causing effects, and also has the World Health Organization has recently withdrawn its statement that it is a harmless technology. So there are people who disagree with you. I'm not saying they're right or you're right. I'm saying we need to know more about this issue. So I'm going to play some of what Joshua Hart...
One last thing, Robert.
Sorry?
When you look at your cell phone and it's got four or five bars up there, that means you have a strong signal. That signal is still incredibly weak. It's just weak enough to drive the cell phone.
I understand.
That's
this,
all
they consider this
enough power to drive.
Bob, they consider
the
this a different technology because it spikes. It doesn't do the same thing as a cell phone. But again, I'm not a scientist. I've not researched
that
this. So I'm going to allow.
Spikes means
I'm going to wait a minute.
On.
I'm going to allow this individual
later
on tape to speak. And if you have some, you know, response to what he has to say, call
another
back.
Time.
Call back another time. And, I'll play a little of that, and we'll see if we get some more supportive calls. And Bob, thank you for calling in, because I do know, you know, you're on the side of, you're on the winning side at the moment. I think the large corporate entities that are installing these things are doing it regardless of the voters of Watsonville Capitol in Santa Cruz County, and at least their so-called representatives and what they've passed in terms of legislation supposedly presenting a moratorium on these meters. But in terms of our radio audience, I think a lot of people are, well, at least a number of the people that I've not come up with anybody except for you, Bob, who actually is a supporter. So let's hear what Joshua Hart has to say about this issue. And this is, you can find this on smart meters, stopsmartmeters.org.
Things as elections, you probably like about a year.
And actually, there's another speaker initially. Joshua comes on in a moment.
Problems they can cause.
Actually, I think what we'll do is there's a long song that begins the presentation of the speaker. Let's listen to this, however, and actually skip the music and get straight to the more...
I thought, wow, I mean, it's not everyone, but it's really common. There's a privacy invasion because all our energy usage data, it's instead of a meter reader coming to the house and getting a compilation of our monthly total, now the meters are sending as often as every second or two. This was confirmed by the Electric Power Research Institute just recently. With the amount of emissions coming from the meters, that as often as every 1 or 2 seconds, they'll be sending data on energy usage to the utility company. They send it wirelessly. Meters will be a part of what's called a mesh network, where the signals will relay until they get to a collector antenna, relay to it. It's like a cell tower antenna, and it goes straight to PG&E. So the meter reader's gone. They're out of the picture, and this is one of the benefits for the utility company, is that they don't have to pay for meter readers anymore. So the privacy, utility companies will know our energy usage second by second throughout the day, when we wake up, when we go to bed, as far as energy usage. There's an additional part of the system called the home area network, which is actually in legislation right now, part of the system, which is putting transmitters inside of all appliances. So when you flip a switch on or off in your house, that information will be sent to the meter, which sends it on to PG&E. And so the ability to know a great deal about what's going on in a household is coming soon. This is a voluntary thing at this point, but the ability, in this bill that's before Congress right now, these transmitters will be in appliances. So there's a huge privacy issue as far as all this data going out to the utility companies. And the utility companies right now are fighting at the PUC for any liability for third-party use of data. They've been saying, your data's safe with us, your data's safe with us, and yet they're fighting to have any liability once it goes to another party.
And we do have a caller, but before I put you on, caller, again, I want to say this is one of two activists speaking publicly. One of them is Joshua Hart, but obviously this is not Joshua. This is his associate at the Monterey County Green Party on May 6, 2011. And I'll be able to identify, hopefully, the speaker soon. I kind of jumped into it to avoid the musical interlude, which probably was a mistake because I think I missed the first part of her argument. But we do want to know what your thoughts are, caller. Smart meters, yes, no, or maybe?
Definitely no. And here's one of the ways that the PG&E is able to install these things. It's because we, as a county voting on that, have no say because it's the PUC, which is a state-controlled thing, and the PUC says they can do it. So that's how they're getting around that. And I think there's court battles going on relative to that right now.
Yeah, I think that's what the farmer's market guy, Jeff, was telling me, the fellow who had the stand at the farmer's market opposing smart meter installation or encouraging people to opt out. Have you opted out yourself?
I haven't opted out, but I'm on that course. And one thing I heard someone was going to do, he was going to put a metal band in front of the meter so that it could still be read, but they can't take it off. If you touch the meter itself, do something to that, then you run the course of getting in trouble. But if you just put something in front of it where they can't take it off, well, then you got them there. They said that if you...
You mean they can't take off the old meter and replace it with a smart meter?
That is correct. One thing I also heard that I talked to one of the people at PG&E when I paid my bill, and she says, well, if you opt out, you get a charge of $20 per month on your bill for opting out. And I said to her, well, let's see. If you put it on, you don't have to pay the meter reader anymore, so we should actually get a discount, shouldn't we? And she kind of laughed. I used to be a meter reader here in Santa Cruz County, and it was the greatest job. I just loved it. So they're taking away jobs.
So you're a frustrated meter reader who doesn't like smart meters because they're taking away your former employment. Actually, that's a valid concern. You know, on the other hand, obviously, if that's the only concern, it has to be balanced against the things that the previous caller talked about, like efficiency, whether this is a hysterical call for simply opposing a new technology because, you know, some would say sarcastically, a tin hat opposition, a aluminum foil tin hat approach, which Well, I don't. That's not really my feeling about the kind of criticism I've heard. I'm not really getting specific responses to the claims of the opponents.
They are going to be able to now monitor moment by moment your meter, your consumption. So I can see in the future they're going to put tiered payment schedules on those, so that if you use it during peak hours, you can have a higher rate charge to your bill as opposed to lesser usage hours. And with a meter reader, you read it once a month, and there's no way they can monitor that afternoon usage versus nighttime usage. So it's going to give them much more control for higher.
And again, taking the part of the devil's advocate, let's suppose, I don't know what Bob's position is, the fellow who just called in, but he would say, so what? Shouldn't you pay more during some periods and less during others? Isn't that more economical? Isn't that a way of making it more usable for everyone?
Should you pay more in highway taxes because you drive during rush hour?
Well, it is true, for example, that there are special lanes that you can use on highways during rush hours that you can't use at other times if you have a particular kind of vehicle, right?
That's true. That's true. You got me there.
Yeah, carpooling. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not saying, again, I'm not trying to, you know, prejudge the argument. I just want to be fair about this. And I'd like to see, on this end as on other issues, a real discussion that actually where the opponents really address the issues instead of simply, you know, denouncing each other or, you know, saying, what a bunch of idiots, he's a Luddite, or, oh, they're trying to kill us, you know, or they don't care, they're corporate greed heads, although, frankly, I tend to be more sympathetic to that argument.
Well, actually, what I'm going to do is go out and purchase a device that will measure the electromagnetic radiation. And I'm going to walk up to, they've got smart meters in Capitola, the gas that I've seen. I'm going to walk up to it, see how much it deflects, or how much of a reading it gets, walk back, and see what the actual distance is that it's really emitting a radiation that can be harmful. So then that way I'll be able to get an objective way of saying, okay, I'm 10 feet away from this thing and I'm still being irradiated. And then do the same thing on the present meters and go, well, let's see, it's this versus that. I don't have the information right now, but, you know, it's just something that I'm going to take an objective look at the radiation.
Right. Again, the question is going to be, is it harmful radiation? Is it more harmful in a particular kind of presentation if it comes in short bursts, as the opponents of smart meters claim? Again, these are issues that I do not know the answer to, and, you know, I'm always looking for the answer to the
Well, I look at it. Any more radiation of any kind is going to, we're an electromagnetic entity, our bodies are. So whether or not we can say, oh, this is safe or this is not safe, well, you might not know that for 100 years because of given outcomes, but we are an electromagnetic unit, and the radiation will, it has the potential for changing the way our cells reproduce and things of that nature. I put a compass right next to my cell phone, and it deflects the needle. So there is, and that was a cell phone that was off. I take it about 6 inches away, and it doesn't.
Right. Well, the question though is whether that's dangerous, and that I don't know. Let's move back on into this discussion, and thanks for the update, and let us know you know, if your system works, and keep us informed.
Thanks.
All righty, man. And phone lines are still open, 427-3772, but let's take a sensuous break, or perhaps a feminist break, or who knows. You be the judge.
Boys want sex in the morning, sex in the morning, when I'm not my best.
Want sex in the morning,
petting and pawing, tearing at my breast. Someone who wins, someone to pin, someone to undertake.
Boys want someone to fall on, someone to crawl on, someone have a way.
Want sex in the morning, sex in the morning, covers at my knees.
Want rotten conditions, passive position, I am a trapeze.
Want someone who's sleepy, someone who's keepy,
to sleep. There is nothing I like better than a jostle now and then, with the hands under the sweater and the back that starts to bend. But before my eyes are open, I don't want to have to hide from a simpleton still poking with a thimble full of pride. Boys want sex in the morning, sex in the morning, soiling the sheets. Sex while I'm yawning, suddenly spawning when I'm half asleep.
Boys want someone unconscious, somebody not just waiting for a thrill.
Boys want sex with surprises, sex with sunrises, someone on the pill. There is nothing like a lover who can satisfy your needs, and the joy when you discover just how often he succeeds. But before my eyes can focus, I don't need him to surprise by descending like some locust on a field of sleeping thighs. Boys want sex in the morning, sex in the morning, when I'm still not fresh.
Boys want something that strikes them, someone who likes them, fondling their flesh.
Boys want someone to take and someone to break and comment on their size.
Boys want someone to prod and someone who nod and then just close her eyes.
And that was Uncle Banzai, Boys Want Sex in the Morning. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I've let myself get into the smart meter debate. Here's, again, some audio from the video Smart Meters Exposed, where I guess we're going to get finally, I believe, Josh is going to be speaking. Joshua Hart, I believe his name is. And this is before the Green Party of Monterey County. Let's hear a little of this.
I think every good protest movement needs singers and songwriters, and we're eternally grateful for Nina for writing great songs. First of all, I want to say thank you to the Green Party and thank you to the Peace Resource Center for hosting this event.
And you'll hear a female voice too. That, and you heard one. That was Nina Beattie, by the way, speaking. If I'm properly reading the label in front of her her placard, the little identifying piece of paper that's in front of her here on the TV screen, and it's Joshua Hart speaking now.
We're grateful it's being televised. This is a really critical issue for us here in California in 2011. I come at this issue as an environmentalist, as a professional transportation planner. In the last year, my career has done a bit of a turn because PG&E came to our home in Scotts Valley. They announced that they would be installing a smart meter. And at that point, I used a cell phone, I used Wi-Fi, I was unaware of the large body of evidence documenting biological harm from these technologies, and my girlfriend wasn't. She was more enlightened than I was, and she was very, very concerned about the smart meter. So I called up PG&E and I said, you know, we'd rather not have one of these things. And they said, we're sorry, it's mandatory, everyone in the state has to have one, you have no choice. And I got off the phone quite alarmed that this was happening, and read a great deal of primary scientific peer-reviewed literature looking at very low-level radio frequency emissions and their effects on biological systems, including human beings. And what I found really shocked me. I found the Henry Lai study, which was a study in 1996, carried out by a professor at the University of Washington. He exposed rat brain neurons to low levels of radio frequency and found that the DNA was broken apart and inhibited from repairing itself from very low levels of microwave radiation. And other studies, which we can go into more detail later, such as damage to the blood-brain barrier to keep toxic substances from entering our brains and causing us harm. And so I was really shocked when I read this because the standards that are set for cell phones and Wi-Fi and other wireless technology are far above what these studies found were serious impacts. And I stopped calling my girlfriend a tinfoil hat crazy, for one. And the second thing I did was get rid of my cell phone and get rid of my Wi-Fi and get rid of the cordless phone, get all my friends and my family, try and convince them to also get rid of these technologies and to really engage with the science around this and to not just trust in government regulations that they are looking out for our best interests, but to take a more involved, concerned, and analytical approach to these things. So we started Scotts Valley Neighbors Against Smart Meters in July. We got the Scotts Valley City Council to join a couple of petitions to the Public Utilities Commission requesting a halt to further installations based on the issues of accuracy and on electromagnetic fields and health. They did so. They were followed very soon after by Capitola, Watsonville. The County of Santa Cruz joined a couple months later. And now we're at a point where 42 local governments throughout the state of California have taken a formal position insisting that PG&E and the other utilities halt installation of these devices. So that's where we are right now. You know, StopSmartMeters.org is working statewide. We just went down to Santa Barbara and presented at a conference held by the Tea Party and other community activists. In that community, and it looks like very much like the fight is spreading to Southern California. Up until this point, it's been focused on Northern California. And another thing that's characterized this movement has been the widespread nature of the involvement from different groups. This is really a nonpartisan issue. Republicans, Democrats, Green Party, Tea Party, lots of people are coming at this issue from many different perspectives, including health, privacy, safety, security, wise investment, democratic processes, a number of things which we'll go over. In spite of the widespread local uprising and the widespread public condemnation, significant evidence that the installation of these smart meters may be very, very harmful to public health. We're still in a situation where the Public Utilities Commission, made up of appointees by former Governor Schwarzenegger and current Governor Brown, is failing to take adequate action to stem the installations and to take public concerns into consideration. So that's a bit of an overview. You know, you're lucky to have Nina Beattie as part of your Monterey County community. She's been avidly going after this issue, informing and educating the public and Board of Supervisors and City Councils, spending thousands of dollars of her own money on newspaper ads to warn the population. And but there's more to be done. Wellington Energy, who's the contractor to PG&E, is continuing to install. Even when there are signs, even when people are on the do not install list. So it's been a very ugly chapter in our history where elderly people, vulnerable people have been intimidated, have been threatened with having their electricity cut off in the middle of winter, threatened with fines and rate increases. And they know that these vulnerable people and elderly people are the least likely to complain or make a fuss. So it's up to all of us to stand together and if necessary, take peaceful, nonviolent, direct action to stop these installations from happening, because harm is happening. We've been inundated by reports of headaches, nausea, dizziness, particularly tinnitus, ringing in the ears has been very, very common. And these are coming from all sectors of California life and the population, come from separate areas, people who had no idea that EMFs were even a problem, suddenly have a smart meter installed in their home and develop symptoms. So with that, I'll hand it over to Nina with some other ideas, and we'll go through some of the problems with smart meters and maybe some of the potential solutions and ways of preventing their installation and of educating ourselves and our communities, not only about smart meters specifically, but on larger wireless issues and also larger issues of how we're going to grapple and deal with climate change in a real way.
Josh, I have a quick question. When you say you're hearing about people's concerns about the health issues, where, if I know someone who has a health issue, where would they...
Someone from the audience is asking a question, which I think Joshua will be repeating in a moment.
Is someone collecting this information? Repeat the question.
The question was, if there's someone who has a health issue, where do they report it and what steps do they take?
Yeah.
You know, the best thing to do is contact either myself, our organization at info@stopsmartmeters.org, mm-hmm. or the EMF Safety Network, which is emfsafetynetwork.org. We're both compiling testimonials from people who've had health damage, and we're getting them to fill out a form in preparation for a possible class action lawsuit that will seek damages from the utilities for forced exposure to microwave radiation.
Thank you.
I wanted to go over some of the problems. The health issues are most serious, but there are other extremely serious problems that have been coming up. And the first one that really came on people's radar in the Bakersfield and Fresno area were the increased bills. And that was people's bills. And it wasn't just going up a little bit. There were bills increasing 200-300% or more. I talked to a policeman in San Francisco who I did a short presentation to the Board of Supervisors up there. And he came up to me afterwards. He said, my bill tripled after I got a smart meter. And I went into an office recently, and I said something about smart meters and bills going up. And the two women who were secretaries turned right around, and in sync they said, my bill went up when I got a smart meter. And I thought, wow. I mean, it's not everyone, but it's really common. There's a hacking risk. This is wireless. The grid, the electrical grid can be hacked. The individual meters can be hacked. And, you know, we can go all the way from terrorist organizations to the neighbor kid down the street who's tech savvy, who you said something to him, it made him hate you, and now he's going to hack into your meter, he can raise your bill and do other things. One
Welcome
of the things
the
with these meters,
monthly
our,
meeting
our,
of the Green
our
Party
biological
Monterey
systems
County.
Are so sensitive to very tiny levels of
Sorry about that.
Radio frequency. And I have a study that was done in Russia that 1/10 trillionth of 1 microwatt altered E. coli bacteria's genetic structure. I mean, it's very, very powerful stuff at very tiny levels. And these are 1 million microwatt meters. They're 1 watt and more. A lot of meters say 3 watts. 3 million microwatts is a huge amount for microwave radiation. PG&E is fond of saying, these are just 1 watt meters, 1 or 2 watt meters, and we think of light bulbs. This is different radiation entirely. This is microwave. It's very, very powerful. And as I've started to get into the research, as Josh said, it's just mind-boggling what is not going into the newspapers. This international research, other countries are sitting up and taking notice. They're enacting laws. The European Parliament is really looking into this more and more. And Germany warned their citizens about Wi-Fi use, and the French took out Wi-Fi out of their libraries. It's all microwave radiation. Taking it very, very seriously. Their news media, I think, is doing a better job of covering this. So the hacking risk. There's also a remote shutoff capability. This also saves PG&E and the other utilities some money. They don't have to have someone come to your door if you don't pay your bill or there's some question, knock on your door and say, you know, I'm going to shut off your power. Is there, you know, an issue? They won't be doing that anymore. This is just from at the head office. They can ding the meter and shut it off. Now, if the meter can be hacked and it can be disconnected remotely, there's some problems. And I think particularly our individual meters, as well as our emergency personnel, everybody's getting smart meters, police, fire, hospitals, all that. So the opportunity for mischief on a widespread level is huge. There have been reliability and accuracy issues. When the bills went up in Fresno and Bakersfield, everybody said, why? And with much foot dragging, the PUC finally did an investigation by the structure group. They picked a company that has ties with PG&E. It's like, well, how would we get? And they'd say it's very independent. This is an independent report, and the other utility companies have also been parroting that phrase. But this is a company that's intimately involved with smart grid deployment and development. And as well as having PG&E as a client. There have been interferences. You can see these are not simple meters. This isn't just a health issue. These are like many issues involved. Interference issues with ground fault circuit interrupters, the little button in your outlets that click off if there's like little circuit breakers. There have been interference with these, documented by PG&E. There have been interference with electronics. People have reported even electrical appliances being fried. And there have been interference with pacemakers. I know a woman in Salinas who got within 4 to 5 feet of a smart meter and her pacemaker started defibrillating. So this is very, very serious issues that PG&E is ignoring and the PUC is ignoring. There have even been reports of fires with these. So, and we have, of course, the meter reader job loss, which is another issue. So these are meters with lots of problems. The PUC is refusing, despite probably, I would say, 1.5 to 2 years of complaints on these meters. It started with Bakersfield and Fresno, and State Senate Majority Leader Dean Flores was saying, we got to do something, people. And we've continued now. The health issues have become more center stage, and the PUC continues to push these aside and not deal with them. And no one at the legislative level, other than an opt-out proposal that's now been withdrawn, has been dealing with this. So these are major issues. This is irresponsible, I think, by our state government not to look at these seriously and do something. And so that's where we're at.
And, you know, if we're looking at this laundry list of problems, obviously if we're running a campaign against smart meters, it's great to have so many issues because people from different political persuasions who care about different aspects of this problem can get engaged with it. However, it continues to be horrifying to see the human, financial, and environmental cost of these meters. I think one of the critical reasons why there are so many problems with the smart meters is that they have not been safety tested. There was additionally no public consultation, either with members of the public or even with local governments, cities and counties. So you have a situation where PG&E is going into these local governments, these cities and counties, these areas, these particularly rural areas, and installing their data collector unit antennas on public land, publicly owned right-of-way, without even as so much as informing the local councils. And this has violated a number of franchise agreements that local governments have with the utility. But everything, you know, stems from this lack of consultation, this lack of adequate democratic process. And this is one of the largest technology rollouts ever in history. Mandatory installation of pulsed microwave meters on everybody's home and business in the state of California, 10 million meters installed by Southern California Edison, San Diego Gas and Electric, and Pacific Gas and Electric. And yet there was virtually no notification. So the whole thing has been very, very shady. It's been under the radar. You know, I only learned about this 9 months ago. Many people only learn about it when the utility comes around and installs it on their home. I'd like to say a bit more about the fire risk because I think that's really important. In January, a former Wellington Energy employee, and Wellington Energy is the company that's contracted with PG&E to install the meters throughout their territory, a former employee of Wellington came to us as a whistleblower and said, I want to talk to you guys because I have something to say. And we interviewed him, and we posted that interview on our website. Some of you may have read it. In his interview, he alleges that that Wellington and PG&E, by association, are not following adequate safety procedures in installing these meters. The meter installers, contrary to FCC requirements, are temporary employees. They are not professionals. They are receive 20 hours of training at most, and they receive a bonus for installing as many meters as they can, which means there is an incentive to get these meters slapped on quantity over quality. And we've seen meters that have not been installed correctly, not touching the contacts, and therefore risking a fire from arcing when an electrical current jumps over an area when the meter hasn't been installed properly. It's called arcing. And this Wellington whistleblower warned us of the fire risk associated with arcing. Now, that is...
That is actually only the second of a four-part video, actually the only halfway through the second part of a four-part video, which you can hear and see at stopsmartmeters.org. And I'm going to stop here myself because there's no point in playing all this for you folks on the radio if you can actually download it on your computers, if you have access to a computer. I have a longer show on Sunday, and if I get phone calls, and if you want to call me off air, you can call me at 423-4833, that you want to hear this in all its extensiveness, I guess another hour's worth of essentially anti-smart meter presentation, which is interesting, although, again, you know, I can't tell you whether their studies are accurate. I can't tell you whether their claims are true. I haven't researched them. But they are certainly making a number of claims that I think need to be considered, particularly since they've been taken seriously by 42 city and local governments under, and this is the important thing, activist pressure from communities. I don't have much respect for local governments often who seem to essentially be at the beck and call of various special interest groups and police departments and so forth. But when activist groups are able to successfully speak up and get changes to local government, that's something else. Again, that's impressive. And I'm particularly impressed, again, perhaps because of my hope that people will stand up in their own way, whether civilly disobedient or through other methods to oppose the foreign wars that are destroying the economy, the country, and our consciences here in the United States, the anti-homeless legislation in Santa Cruz, the war on the poor and the wars abroad, that war on terror, war on drugs, all these bogus wars that are increasing the police state apparatus, unchecked, really, and, you know, being used by the party in power to continue their own power and to expand it as they go, whatever they say at the election booth. Whatever they say every 2 or 4 years. I'm glad when an activist come together to address these issues, and I think they certainly need a hearing. And when they take action to block the road and to try to insist that there be, you know, the public be consulted, in this case in Santa Cruz County, that the law be followed, that, although again, I know I've heard arguments, well, you know, there's a higher right of PG&E as a property so-and-so to proceed with its corporate activities under, I don't know, right to property or some such thing or other agreements it has. I mean, I'm less sympathetic if the arguments on the other side have to do with health, accuracy, fire danger, public participation, I guess I said privacy already. There are a number of real considerations that I think are more important than those. And when individuals are willing to put themselves on the line to say, no, this vehicle won't go. So that's really my involvement. And I hope that there'll be more information forthcoming on these issues. And again, as I said, anybody who wants to address these issues specifically, and I'd like to get some specific discussion, I would love to have on the show. If you're a fan of smart meters, one of our callers was, call in again, or, you know, I know that you might even arrange to come in and talk. But I'd like to have you facing somebody who has what sounds like an informed and educated counter-opinion. Doesn't mean that he's right and you're wrong. It just means that these issues really have to be examined as issues and not merely as a, you know, rhetorical back and forth. This show normally does a lot of discussion around issues of poor and homeless matters, and that's what I'm going to go back to, interviews on the street and so forth, and, of course, your phone calls at 427-3772.
Hello?
So I'm down here on Pacific Avenue on Thursday, the 28th of July, in front of the old Borders building, talking with
Brian.
It's about 8 o'clock or thereabouts. And Brian, you got your backpack, and boy, it looks like a lot of stuff with you, neatly put together, including a sleeping bag, implements of a crime, with a little sign, "Will work for food" on top of that, and another one nearby, "Anything helps." And of course, you're sipping coffee, but you said you were interviewed by Channel 8?
Yes, I was. I was interviewed for these new parking meters.
The red "don't give to the poor" meters, "give to us, we'll take care of the problem" meters?
Exactly. I told Channel 8 that they were a joke because I have to take, in order to get anything, I have to call a social worker to get a bus pass or whatever I need, and it's just more of a hassle than
getting the money directly.
Exactly. I'm hardly making. Yesterday I made $8, didn't even make $8 in over 6 hours.
And again, we're talking with
Brian Lateek.
And Brian, how long have you been in town now?
Almost 2 months.
And have things gotten better, worse, the same? What do you notice?
Worse.
In what way?
I can barely make any money to do my laundry, which I haven't done in over a month and a half.
Now, what about the Homeless Service Center? Do they have a laundry machine? Is that available to you?
Yeah, but you have to sign up and have to be there by before 8 o'clock on a Monday morning, which I have no way of getting up there besides walking for 3 hours from where I camp.
Well, they have a shuttle. Oh, wait, that's the shuttle to the beach that costs a quarter. The other one costs, what, $1.25, $1.50?
$1.50.
$1.50. Well, surely you can afford that. That's a minor pittance.
I can't even afford to eat most days.
Now, what's the food situation in Santa Cruz? Because I've heard that there's a lot of free meals.
There is, but you have to do a lot of walking for them.
So,
and I can't always get to them at the times that
they are there.
Yeah.
Now, what about police and hosts and private security guards? How are they treating you?
Actually, they're kind of backing off of me right for the moment, but I expect that to change at any given time. Out of a whim, they can roll up on me and slight me for anything at any given time.
Now, you know, when I originally talked to you about a month ago, I mistook you for another guy, Curtis Chad, who was three men reported seeing him assaulted up there on the corner by Officer Winston near New Leaf Market a month or two ago. Has anyone else, have you seen any physical assaults by police or things that concern you in that regard? What's your general sense of that?
I haven't seen any brutality from the police, but unfortunately, it does happen, and I haven't seen or heard any more of that happening.
Now, you sleep outside.
Yes, I do.
And have you been bothered sleeping outside, told you can't sleep and so forth, or have you been left alone?
For the most part, I've been left alone, but there's been a couple of occasions where I've been told by first alarm that I can't be staying out of the rain under a bridge, and I told him what. I asked him point blank where I could go, and he had no answer after 3-4 times of asking him.
And did you stay or did you go?
I left because I didn't care for the ticket.
Into the rain?
Yeah.
And how many times exactly did this happen?
Just one time about a month ago.
Yeah, and what bridge are we talking about?
By the new Monterey Bay building that they're putting up on Pacific. Up near the beach.
Huh, okay.
Right below Howard Johnson's.
Boy, all so far unfamiliar to me, but I may catch up with them. Have you noticed any... you've been down here, how many hours a day are you down on Pacific Ave?
Anywhere from 6 to 9 hours a day.
And what do you see in terms of street performers?
Quite a few.
So do you think that the police are going after them at all? Are they being driven away or moved along a lot? Or are they being encouraged or tolerated? What's happening?
A little bit about everything. Some of them are being told to move on, and some are getting tickets, and some of them are just being left alone.
Any particular thoughts you want to pass on to the community?
I'd just like to see people get to know some of us out here, because we aren't all bad people. We're just trying to maybe possibly get a job, mm-hmm. And not cause any troubles. I don't want to cause any troubles or make anybody uncomfortable out here. I'm just trying to get a little side jobs so I don't have to panhandle every day.
You ever use the lumberyard or?
No, I don't, because there's so many people up there that there's major competition up there.
Now, what about the St. Francis Soup Kitchen? Do you ever go there?
Yes, I do when I can get
up. You have a lot of stuff to haul around.
Yeah,
there.
It takes me about an hour just to walk from here to there and another hour to get back.
Is that because of all your stuff?
Yes.
How many pounds would you say you carry per day?
I'm averaging about 80 pounds on my back and between the two backpacks in my hands.
I understand there's no storage space at the Homeless Service Center to keep stuff?
Exactly.
Is there any space in town where you can keep stuff?
Not without paying for it.
And what is the what kind of a rate would you have to pay?
Minimal of about $50 a month for a storage unit.
And since you only make $8 a day, that's kind of hard.
Yes, it is.
Where are you coming from?
I came from Eugene, Oregon.
And why did you come here? Because you heard it was a wonderful place for the homeless?
Sure. Something like that.
Really? So you heard that this was an easy place to be?
Yeah. And boy, was I mistaken in some ways.
Now,
I love the town, but sometimes it's frustrating on my part where I can't get any, even side work or any type of lawn work.
What kind of work would you be doing if it was available?
I'd be open to almost anything but roofing.
And I see you have a sign, we'll work for food. How frequently are you offered work here?
Once.
And you've been here for how long, about a month?
Almost 2 months.
And you've been out here almost every day? Because I see you occasionally.
I'm out here 7 days a week.
And you say a number of hours each day?
8 to 9 hours a day.
And you're usually in this location at Borders?
Usually within a block and a half of here.
Do they move you around here?
Yeah, they do.
What do they say?
After 1 hour, I have to relocate to a new spot.
How about the people of Santa Cruz? It doesn't sound like they're being terribly giving. Do you see more shoppers these days, less shoppers? Because you've only got a couple months to compare, but we're now in the high part of the tourist season in the summer. Do you see a lot of tourists?
I see more tourists out towards the beach than I do in downtown, but there's still a fair number of tourists downtown.
You see tourists giving to these what I call gentrification meters, or what you call joke meters, that supposedly will distribute money to the needy?
I have not seen anyone give any money to these meters yet.
And do you get generally ignored by the population or abused by the population, or said, gee, I wish I could help, but I'm too poor, or haven't got any time, or my pockets are sewn shut, or something?
Basically all of the above. Most people will ignore me unless I catch their eye, and they will acknowledge me, but they won't give. 9 out of 10 people will not give.
Sounds like more like 99 out of 100 will not.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, if you say you've gotten $8 in 8 hours, that dollar an hour, what's your average donation?
Usually about a dollar.
So only 8 people donate every day?
Give or take.
Mostly, yeah.
Some days I do a little better, but it is towards the end of the month, and everybody's real tight right now. And I can understand that, but still, I'm trying to be able to survive myself, and I just don't understand why more people can't at least pocket change.
Well, I thought I had more questions, but they're slipping out of my mind like shit through a goose. So I will thank you. And again, we've been talking with
Brian Latique.
Thanks, Brian. You can probably find Brian if you're here, if they haven't moved you along in front of the now vacant Borders building, which no longer has the word Borders on it. I guess it's 1200 Pacific Avenue. Thanks, Brian.
No problem. Have a great day, everybody.
So here's...
Before we get into what's here, just a couple comments. I got a call from Bob, who I just wanted to use the word hypochondriac, possibly to describe the anti-smart meter folks. And we also had a call from Dangerous John Teal King, a San Jose activist, who has sent me an email. He's concerned about the proposed slashing of Social Security. And he sent me a letter. I think he's going to be talking about it in a phone call soon. He's, I think, listening to the show and maybe calling in. He's notes that in San Jose, a lot of people are spending their time going to meetings and movies, mostly at the San Jose Peace Center, but there's no umbrella organization active over there in San Jose, and he hasn't seen any activity from the South Bay Mobilization Group in ages, though they still have an office at the Peace Center. Again, this sort of unfortunately tends to sort of mirror what's happening in Santa Cruz. And San Jose, however, is the second largest city in the state, so it's kind of depressing to hear that's the case. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Hey, Robert. This is John Teal King.
And you're probably aware, John, that I'm reading your email here.
Yeah.
And you also mentioned 60 people showed up at Zoe Lofgren's office, I guess it was day before yesterday, at the suggestion of Move On.
It was also at the suggestion of Obama.
And Bold Progressives, SEIU.
Conduct our representatives.
And Zoe Lofgren is a Republican?
No, she's a Democrat.
She's a Democrat.
Yeah.
San Francisco Labor Council passed a resolution on July 25th about, and this was your issue, not cutting Social Security.
Right.
And you think that they were acting at the behest of Obama's bliss, as you put it?
Yeah. And the theory of Obama's bliss goes something similar to, I don't know if you ever watched the TV show V.
Ah, yes. Science fiction show about these evil reptilian monsters who come to...
Evil
aliens.
From outer space that are disguised themselves as humans and...
All right, the monsters
what
are among us.
What happens is this leader of their cult called Anna goes on TV and basically mesmerizes at least the alien people anyway. She's capable of mesmerizing them or hypnotizing them with her bliss, so-called.
Uh-huh.
And I'm theorizing that Obama has a similar effect on his followers.
Well, we're all trained to have, you know, utter respect for these high authorities, which... you only gradually lose as you see what liars they are and how full of substanceless blather they are and how much they're really concerned with power rather than any principle.
Yeah.
And that's unfortunately the case with many of them in the existing organizations as they're currently, particularly the Democrats and the Republicans.
So one particular point where this is particularly glaring is the fact that 54% of the Democrats support the war in Libya, whereas something like two-thirds of the general public does not support the war in Libya. So you can see right away that's a partisan issue.
Now run those figures by me again.
54% of Democrats support the war in Libya. 67% of the people in general do not support the war in Libya.
Well, what poll are you looking at?
I'm not exactly sure what it was, but
I mean, I know there's a massive, there's strong and growing majority not against the war in Libya, but against the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, and of course. You know, you get occasional chatter in the Congress about the War Powers Act. Last month there was some of that, and I was going to read an article on that issue, and I may do that later in the show. But no real action to cut anything back, in spite of, the absurd statements that Obama's making about there not really being a real war going on. The U.S. isn't really supporting a war by supplying implements of war and drones and all kinds of other things that involve, bombing, causing civilian casualties, allegedly to protect the civilians. I mean,
I've renamed NATO the North Atlantic Terrorist Organization.
Ah, well.
Because I heard on Flashpoints what they're doing is they're not just bombing civilians accidentally, they're deliberately bombing civilians. First they bomb the civilians, and then when the fire trucks and ambulances show up, they bomb the fire trucks and ambulances.
That
sounds like... The same tactic that the terrorists use when they set up one bomb. And when the ambulance arrived, they set off another one.
That's what some of the extreme nationalist groups in these countries, I don't like to call them terrorists, even though, it is true that if you look at the stats, the Taliban in Afghanistan, by even leftist standards, has killed far more civilians than the U.S. and the NATO forces. But the argument that I see here is that they're reacting to the presence of these troops, and as anybody would in their own country, if foreign troops were there, and that's
right. I'm not taking into account that part of it. You're right.
Right, but I mean, it is true that I'm no particular fan of the Taliban. You know, I tend to feel that. Anyway, you know, I think your issue has to do with local organizing. People actually went to this representative's office, at the behest of some Democratic Party organizing because
for the first time in modern history that I can remember that it actually worked for me wanting to do anything, because I went there on Mandela's birthday, which was the previous Monday, and I was the only one that showed up at Loughran's office, even though Mouan had specifically organized an event for that day.
Who had organized an event?
Mouan.
Or you call them Dream On now, right?
We call them Dream On, yeah, because of that one incident on Monday.
And you did want to point out that there are our own representatives. Sam Farr did not. He did sign on to the Progressive Caucus's call to not cut Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. Whereas
right.
Lofgren, who was the point of this protest over in San Jose.
She did sign on to it also.
Also signed on to this. And so the people showed up to thank her. I mean, this, you know.
Yeah, it's like basically celebrating after the fact. It's like we won the war, so we'll go out and celebrate. You know, or we won that battle, so we'll go out and celebrate.
And actually what Obama's
planning. Come here and fight before the problem is solved, you know.
Well, I think Obama is, you know, I think there are indications he's planning to sell out Social Security like he's been selling out on the war and selling out to the banks. And you know,
yeah.
Even talking to people who are big supporters of his in the election and my own family. Everybody's tired of these policies. Many people are tired of these policies. But the real question is, what's to be done to change them? I mean, the people in Egypt apparently know what to do, and the people in Tunisia know what to do. And even the people in Syria will risk their lives to do this stuff. And even in Wisconsin, you can get a bunch of people together for a while. But then, you know, union leaders will tell them, oh, no, go home. We'll just try an initiative or a recall campaign. And everybody kind of wanders back to their houses. And I guess the answer is you have to keep trying. And
the thing about the Democrats in Wisconsin right now is they got on the ballot for the recall petition, but then they didn't campaign on the basis of union organizing, which was the whole point.
Well, I think it's kind of depressing to see the unions in Wisconsin saying, wait, we'll take all these cutbacks, just don't destroy us as unions, instead of saying hell with these cutbacks. That's what unions were originally meant to do, is not even resist cutbacks, but to demand, you know, improvements in conditions, demand a fair share of the pie, or even more radically, demand radical changes in the social and economic structure that would actually fairly and I think meaningfully give people work and give them a share of the actual result of their labors, instead of, you know, having it siphoned off to the top 1% of the country that's milking us down the road.
Right now, the thing that's getting ignored right now is the people's budget, which is being put forth by the Progressive Caucus, which they admitted they didn't really do enough work to organize around it. But it basically solves the budget problem as we know it today.
Well, I don't know much about that, you know. I don't know. Even the Progressive Caucus doesn't really, you know. I mean, the people who adhere to the Democratic Party generally, I find myself thinking, you know, what a bunch of either fools or tools or you know, people who are not really. I don't know. I mean, how many of us are committed to real change? Not many people. A lot of us are just afraid to let go of what little we have, but. Anyway, you know, I guess I wanted to emphasize or bring up your email, which talked about, your disenchantment with MoveOn.org. But I take it you've been disenchanted with them for a long time. Anyway, they're sort of a front group for Obama. I mean, it looks like. I mean, they're a bunch of Democratic Party centrists who are. Not, you know, I mean, it's hard to find, you know, any militancy, although there are some people who are still militant. Some people are going to jail. You know, some people who have blocked shipments of arms. I don't know if I knew they were doing that under Bush. And I don't think they were doing it because they were Democratic Party people using the issue as the Democratic Party people did to get Obama into power. Anyway, you had some thoughts.
There was one more thing I wanted to mention about the smart meters.
Yes, that's what I wanted to ask.
I was listening to part of the discussion that you were playing about the smart meters. And I did make a more extensive comment on Indy Bay under the notice online about, you know, the meeting they're going to have on August 3rd. Basically, I think, well, it's my understanding that the individual smart meters, the ones that are set up to act all by themselves, only activate once every 15 minutes, and they may broadcast the full 1 or 3 watts, whatever it is, but it's only going to be for like a fraction of a second for once every 15 minutes. So the rule for FCC is that they have to report the total amount of radiation that would be given off if there was a 100% duty cycle on the device. So just because it says in the manual that it's a 3-watt device doesn't mean it's broadcasting a total of 3 watts continuously. See what I'm saying?
No, not really. But, I think, again, there's a lot of information that, you know, is both above my head and also I can't really, you know, support, even though it sounds persuasive to me, without looking at the other side. And I'd love to see again a debate and a discussion on this. For the moment, you know, I'm tending to come down against the smart meters, and sounds like you are too. There is
because another thing is that they apparently are not UL listed. At a Capitola City Council meeting, they called the PG&E rep on the carpet and asked them to find the UL label on the meter, and they couldn't find it. So what that means is it's probably not UL listed, and it may be in violation of another federal law, just like they were saying about the installation.
Again, these kinds of details,
the installation people not being trained, is a violation of federal law.
Right. Well, unfortunately, since they seem to have packed the federal and state commissions, I don't know that it makes a lot of difference. But you know,
it's just that those laws are established, whereas the issue of EMF radiation is not established. The FCC already preempts that.
You know, the problem, John, with John, you know, to me, it doesn't. You know, you're arguing issues that are complex, that require lengthy clarification. I think, I don't have time to do it here, and I don't have the information to do it here. There is, however, coming up an event, Wise Up to Smart Meters Emergency Santa Cruz Town Hall Forum, August 3rd, which is next week on Wednesday, 7 to 9 at Loudoun Nelson Center. It's a teach-in, and again, Joshua Hart, the guy who is the male voice in that discussion you heard earlier. And I'll read a little bit about that. Is there anything else you want to say before I roll off here?
Well, that basically covers all that I wanted to say about it.
Yeah, thanks.
Focusing on the EMF part of it won't necessarily get them all that far because, like I said, the Telecommunications Act federalizes a lot of the issues so that you can't have a local government act against it, basically.
Destroying our local control. I'll talk to you more later, John. Thank you.
Okay.
Major smart meter, major Santa Cruz smart meter forum set for August 3rd. How can a community defend itself? Santa Cruz. Critics of smart meters say they are anti-consumer, a false solution to climate change, and a threat to your health, privacy, safety, and the environment. More than 45 cities and counties throughout the state of California agree. 13 local governments have even gone so far as to criminalize the wireless meters, including Watsonville, Capitola, and Santa Cruz County. The Wise Up to Smart Meters Town Hall Forum in Santa Cruz, California, will feature a panel of national experts who will answer your questions on the subject, including Joshua Hart of StopSmartMeters.org and Dr. Carl Merritt of the Aptos Dove Health Alliance. The panel will be moderated by Michael Zwirling, the owner of KSCO Radio in Santa Cruz. I suppose we should come in spite of that fact. The landmark event will take place Wednesday, August 3rd, 7 to 9 at the Loudoun Nelson Center, 301 Center Street at Laurel in Santa Cruz, operated by a coalition of community advocates led by Stop Smart Meter. As of this announcement, PG&E has not responded to an invitation to participate and defended their smart meter program that has become a debacle of epic proportions. Wireless smart meters have been widely reported to cause headaches, dizziness, ringing in the ears, even memory loss and heart palpitations among susceptible individuals due to the constant bursts of microwave radiation estimated at more than 22,000 per day. The movement against smart meters is the sharp end of a growing movement demanding health-based standards for wireless technology. Wellington Energy, a Pennsylvania-based contractor for PG&E, has resumed installation of wireless smart meters throughout Santa Cruz County as of late June, violating local laws that prohibit installations due to urgent concerns about health impacts from the meter's wireless pulses, which have been measured at 100 to 150 times the cumulative radiation exposure of a cell phone, as well as privacy violations, ongoing accuracy issues, and a series of fires and explosions caused by the new meters. Also not addressing the public access issue. Anyway, all this is more information on this on indiebay.org or on August 3rd at the town hall meeting. We do have a caller. And I warn you, I'm going to cut this smart meter discussion short pretty quick because I want to get on to some other things. But hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Robert, hi. This is David Minton Silva calling from an area.
David Minton Silva, the man who spent how many thousands of hours fighting the sleeping ban in Santa Cruz?
I spent several thousand hours doing petitions, and also I spent 5 months and 9 days fasting.
And you were an incredible organizer during that period of time. There were, of course.
And I'm coming back to Santa Cruz. I just called to let everybody know I'm coming back.
Welcome back, David.
I had to go to San Joaquin Valley, take care of my mother, their Alzheimer's, and, you know, her dying and so forth. Got stuck here in Bakersfield where I was captured by Aryans who beat and robbed me and tried to kill me and tried to make me a pet. But I've managed to maneuver an escape, and I will be coming there August 9th. I'll probably need a few places to crash. Anybody listening, you can take my phone number down now. Area code 661-348-8348. That's my number.
Give that last four digits again, David.
It does. 348-3863. Yes, there we go. That's my cell phone. I have it on me at all times.
And if people want to, if they don't want to call long distance, or if you didn't catch that number, you can feel free to give a call to the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-HUFF.
That's right, 423-HUFF.
And I'll be happy to forward any, you know, I will, of course, forward your number, David. And I'll also, you know, when we talk again, I'm sure we will, I'll pass on any numbers they give me. So.
Yeah. I've been kind of stranded here in Bakersfield, but you know, it's after so many beatings and robberies and car thefts and being taken. The police actually arrested me for reporting being robbed and put me in jail for 6 days without food, medicine, a pillow, a blanket, or phone call. And I had to get a Tulare County judge to let me out. This is not even America here in Bakersfield. This is just very bizarro. So I'm really going to be glad to be back in Santa Cruz. You guys don't know how lucky you have it there. I mean, to be in America. This is not America in Bakersfield. Not America at all.
And it's pretty hot as well, you might add.
Yeah, it's San Joaquin. I was born in the San Joaquin, so I'm kind of used to it. You know, I used to work in the Bay Area every summer.
I'll be so glad
to be back, and I want to get active again. But the first month is going to be my 68th birthday. Can you believe that, 68?
A tip of the hat to Mama Silva. How's that?
Okay, you want to put it that way. I feel like a grandpa lately.
Yeah, well, listen, David. You know, I know you're looking for support, and again, we're talking to an activist who spent a lot of time organizing in Santa Cruz, both as a social worker and as a person concerned about specifically the rights of poor and homeless people around the legal criminalization of the homeless through such things as the sleeping ban and other city council measures. And
served 15 years on commissions of various kinds, and mostly I've always focused on helping the homeless, and now I'm arriving in Santa Cruz being one. But I do have the AIDS Project promising to get me settled real, real fast, which is really great because I've been HIV positive 38 years without a single AIDS episode. I'm one of those kind of walking miracles.
Yeah. Well,
so
I remember.
I can hear your voice, Robert. I can't hear your show, unfortunately. So I just called in blind. You don't mind, do you?
Not at all. And you should know also the show's archived, so you'll be able to hear yourself later. So.
Oh yes, that does. Oh,
think of that. You can spend many happy hours.
I used to have a radio show there. Remember?
Vaguely, maybe. No, I didn't, but I believe you.
Imaginary radio shows. I'll have to play them for you sometime.
Yeah, well, you know, when you get back into town, of course, we will hoist a pint or, you know, I don't know, have a soda together or whatever.
Sure.
And you're welcome to come on the show to talk about, you know, in more detail these grim experiences in Bakersfield and what other people face there.
It's really, really amazing. But I want to get right into the fray in Santa Cruz. But I will need immediately, you know, starting August 9th, I'm bringing my godchild. He sort of takes care of me. And he's got a radical diabetes, so he's a little disabled himself, but he watches out and makes sure I can walk. In case I can't walk, he helps. But I do need places to crash probably, you know, the first couple of weeks right away. So if people just call in and offer, that would be really great. And I'm going to call in you and Thomas' show Sunday, too.
Yeah, and, you know, feel free to call in. Again, the number to call if you've got some places where David and Godchild can crash. 423-4833 is the number to call if you want to make a local call. If you want to call him, you can reach him at 661-348-3863, right, David?
That's right, that's right. And, you know, I'm coming with just all my stuff in U-Haul. All I have is just a recliner and a bed, and I have a desk and some books and albums and so forth, and some lots of electronic equipment.
I don't hold out a lot of hope for this move, but, I mean, I certainly we're passing on the word here, David.
Yeah. Okie dokie.
Hey, man.
Talk to you real soon.
You got my number.
Okay. Bye-bye. Bye.
And that was David Minton Silva, who ran for city council in 1996. One of the few pro-homeless candidates to run, although actually there have been a number of them in the past. His candidacy was derailed when then-Sergeant Andy Crane threw him into a pillar, disabling him, and they protested city council against the sleeping ban, where he was simply picking up petitions which had been sprawled all over the floor when the police had tackled the petitioner, who was also a man known as Jim Costner. That was the famous city council lockdown case in September of that year, where I think there were six or more protesters who locked themselves to the furniture and chanted "End the sleeping ban" or "Homes, not jails." And actually, the exact chant that they were using escapes me, but there was a concern that the city council, after many, many months of protests, was doing absolutely nothing except continuing to arrest poor and homeless people, and they were angry about it. Isn't that strange? Anyway, you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. There's an article in today's Good Times about the gentrification meters, or the Punish the Panhandler meters, or those that remain, those kind of large red meters you see them on a couple of corners. There's one in front of New Leaf. There's one in front of what was the old Borders building. There's one in front of the Silver Shop at Walnut and Pacific. I think I'm told there are 7 meters all in all so far. And three of them I saw today were all disabled. They were either decapitated or their front was smashed in. That was and kind of squished in. That was the one in front of Keontae's at Cathcart and Pacific. The one at Pacific and Soquel had its head chopped off. And similarly with the one in front of the Silver Shop. Maybe that's a normal process. The change is removed that way, perhaps. But it looked like there are a lot of people, or some people anyway, who are angry enough, or maybe they're just the claim by the police is, they just want to rob these meters of all the money that gets put in them. I imagine a hell of a lot more money goes into the parking meters, so I don't think that this sounds like a self-interested kind of statement. I wonder if it isn't by the police department. You can read a rather prejudicially support what they call Imagine Positive Change Meters story by a woman who had written, I think, a much better story about a year and a half ago, Blair Stenvik. Maybe she wrote a better story because at that time she was working for the City on a Hill Press, the university news weekly. Now she's doing the come drink our beer and dance in our, and attend our concerts, Good Times advertising giveaway publication, or the Goon Times, as I like to call it. It quotes me, and I criticize them. You can read some of my comments there. But in the main, it's supportive. She never contacted Orlando, Florida, which also has these meters, or other cities which have used them. She didn't put in a Public Records Act request to find out how much of the meter, how much these things originally cost, how much they've actually gotten from the meters, where's the accounting in terms of how much money has actually gotten to homeless people through them. And to me, of course, I've talked about them extensively on the show. I've said, these are an attempt to cut homeless people and panhandlers generally off from the community by giving the community an excuse and pressure the community to give its money to our wise experts who will handle the homeless. We have a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, Robert. It's John Tilking again.
Hey, John.
While you're talking about the homeless, I had one comment about homeless people on the throwing. When I was walking through downtown San Jose, I stopped to give this homeless guy a dollar or so in change, and he saw that I had coins in my hand. He says, "Don't give me coins. I can't deal with that." So it seems like inflation is hitting the homeless or something, but I thought that your
earlier interview where the guy was making $8 a day, that guy has a much better attitude, so I commend him for his positive attitude.
Well, you know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I hear what you're saying, but, you know, it's we're talking about our own sensibilities as though somehow, you know, we're doing these people a great favor by giving them a few coins. I mean, it's really, it's a degrading thing to have to ask for money. And the idea that we should somehow expect them to behave in a very, you know, courteous, respectful, and gracious and grateful manner, it's kind of disgusting, really. I mean, I have the same attitude you do. I mean, I want my money to be able to produce a, oh, thank you, sir, you know, which is a bunch of horseshit. You know, 25 cents, 50 cents, a dollar doesn't buy you a cup of coffee. You know, come on, won't get you out of the rain. And if,
yeah, but if you ask two people, you got enough to get yourself a hamburger or something. You
know? Try it on the street sometime. It's not as easy as it may sound, man. I mean, I haven't tried it recently, but I've talked to enough people, and my sense is it is not an easy thing to do unless you have a shtick
right.
of some kind. So, and anyway, that's just my thought on that.
Yeah. Anyway, I just thought I'd mention that.
That's okay. Sure.
I wasn't particularly offended by the guy. I mean, it's just like, well, you know, I guess he does need more than a dollar, but...
I mean, you will get more people who will give you money if you, oh, yes, oh, thank you, sir, so much. But either, you know, it's kind of, you know, a sad situation that if you actually have that attitude, I don't think it's... Or it's a hypocritical attitude designed to make the giver feel better. I mean, anyway. Although I think, you know, I think... I recall Carol Denny, the activist in Berkeley, who's a folk singer who I sometimes play her music on the air. Her saying you shouldn't leave your house without, you know, a handful of quarters if you're going to walk past people who have far less than you do. So, you know, I don't know if I do. I don't, you know, I follow that 1/5 of the time, but
yeah.
It's something I do remember. And as I guiltily go home, my pockets still having change, and other people out there having, you know. Still sitting out there on the sidewalk.
Right.
Anyway, thanks for calling in, again, Jim.
And also, they should, another point is they should, you know, they keep harping on the federally funded Social Security, but they too often ignore SSI, which every time the state budget gets cut, that gets cut also. So there's part of it goes through the state on SSI. So to keep that in mind next time the state budget comes up.
Thanks, John.
You know, when people... or rallying against cuts in Social Security.
It would be nice if some people were doing some rallying. I'll talk to you later.
Yeah,
bye-bye. So I've only got about 15 minutes left in the show, hence my abrupt moving on approach. There were a couple things that I noticed that I wanted to bring up. Let's see if I can do that. An article called Obama Puts Bombs Before Food struck my attention. I'm going to read this article by Kelly V. Vlojas. And it's from antiwar.org, which is a libertarian anti-war website. The television warned that some images might be graphic. What ensued was footage of children and babies, some wailing, most eerily quiet in mother's arms, skin and bones, and two breaths closer to death. The children of Somalia are dying from starvation in a region of the world that has been racked by natural and man-made famine for almost three decades. The horrific images are hardly unfamiliar. Sadly, while his crudest Republican critics might ridicule and fearmonger over his Kenyan parentage and his formative years in Indonesia, Barack Obama has clearly put bombing people in the most impoverished, underdeveloped countries in the world ahead of feeding them for the thrust of his tenure in Washington. Obama's so-called empathy, which has won him extraordinary international support when he was first elected, is virtually absent from notice. He's merely carried on with President Bush's brute force war on terror, while failing to see that genuine compassion, when called for, would strengthen his hand in the world's view, not weaken it. Last week, the UN officially declared famine in two southern regions of Somalia that have been experiencing the worst drought conditions in 50 years. This is also the area controlled by Al-Shabaab. The violent and radical Muslim organization rose to power after the Bush administration made it a war on terror mission to eliminate the previously emergent authority, the Islamic Courts Union, a network of Sharia-based courts that have begun to bring law and order and basic services back to a country racked by warlordism. After the ICU was brought to heel with American assistance, the Islamic Courts Union, Al-Shabaab, Bush's worst nightmare, grew up out of the ashes to fill the power vacuum left behind. Today, 3 million Somalis are at risk of starvation, and according to UNICEF, a Somali child is dying every 6 minutes, 250 a day. Secretary of State Clinton announced Wednesday that the U.S. would provide $28 million in new aid for the people in Somalia, as well as Somalis in refugee camps in neighboring Kenya. She said this would be in addition to the $431 million the U.S. has given in food and non-food assistance to the beleaguered Horn of Africa, which also includes Ethiopia, Djibouti, and Kenya this year. Sounds like a lot, until one considers that by mid-May, the U.S. spent some $665 million, almost twice as much, or $2 million a day, helping NATO attack Muammar Gaddafi's government in Libya, a price tag that at this rate is expected to reach $1 billion by the end of September, as the fighting is not yet abated and a resolution is nowhere in sight. That still, of course, dwarfs the $9 billion a month, that's actually dwarfed by the $9 billion a month, $436 billion total to date, that the U.S. is spending on its ongoing war in Afghanistan. And keep in mind, the vast majority of that spending is for military operations, not for refugees or food aid or economic development. The Department of Defense gets 94% of it, while the State Department USAID gets only 5%, or $67 billion since 2002 for its operations in Afghanistan, and that's split between embassy operations and construction costs. Afghan reconstruction and humanitarian assistance. So even in places where we are directly breaking things and causing massive displacement, death, and corruption, humanitarianism still takes a far back burner. Commenting on the seemingly lukewarm effort to get ahead of the looming refugee crisis coming out of Libya, Australian professor Joe Coughlin wrote recently, "It seems that the West is prepared to pay the cost of war, but not the cost of humanitarian aid, especially given that the aid is required as a consequence of the West's decision to take sides in the armed conflict and thus prolong and extend the violence and exacerbate conditions for civilians on the ground." A simple but fitting epitaph for our so-called counterterrorism campaigns in East Africa, Pakistan, Yemen, Somalia, I should say the Obama-Bush campaigns, even, not my campaign, in other words, even in the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, if the Obama administration had put even half the amount of resources and energy in making sure that people didn't starve or wither away in refugee camps, or their livelihoods and homes or villages were not reduced to rubble by U.S. forces, perhaps America would be seen as something other than a very powerful, extremely well-armed schoolyard bully. Instead, our campaigns against extremism and oppression have been overshadowed by our willingness to engage in torture and rendition, collective punishment, supporting dictators, and an eerily indifferent response to collateral damage on the now global battlefield. We've lost the high road and any hearts and minds we might have won along the way. And there's a lot more to this article, again, which I haven't got time to read, but you catch the drift. And you probably heard me talk about it before. It's by Kelly B. Vlachos, and it's Obama Puts Bombs Before Bread. And the writer goes into a lot of the details in other countries, which is interesting. I do want to read a letter from Ed Fry, who is the attorney and activist who began and continued the Sleep Out protest to change the laws criminalizing homeless people and the right to sleep, not anywhere and everywhere, but somewhere in Santa Cruz. And his conviction in court for, quote, illegal lodging for protest political sleeping on the steps of the county building at night last August. He's been sentenced to 6 months in jail, as has activist Gary Johnson, who is a homeless man himself who had no legal alternatives that night, ignored by Judge Gallagher. Here's a letter that Ed Fry sent to Bob Lee, who's the district our district attorney in Santa Cruz. "Dear Mr. Lee, during our three-month sleep-in demonstration at Peace Camp 2010, starting July 4th last year, a few of us sleepers were accused of a misdemeanor, unlawful lodging, under Penal Code Section 647E. We challenge the constitutionality of that law because it makes it illegal to get a night's sleep anywhere in the state of California if you don't have a property right to occupy some kind of physical abode. Judge John Gallagher rejected all our constitutional challenges without providing any meaningful explanation of his reasoning. He then put us on trial and instructed the jury to find us guilty if they determined that we were actually sleeping when the sheriffs arrived on the scene. After we were found guilty, your office, the DA's office, recommended that we be sentenced to 400 hours of labor. But instead, Judge Gallagher sentenced my client, Gary Johnson, and me to 6 months in jail, told us that if we appealed the judgment, we would not be released pending the appeal unless we paid $50,000 bail. Very likely, Judge Gallagher unleashed his fury against us in order to deter others who might be inclined to similarly speak out against the cruelty visited upon homeless people by these heinous laws. After Mr. Johnson and I spent 2 weeks in jail, Attorney Peter Leeming was able to convince the judge to reduce the bail from $50,000 to $110. We are both free now until the appeal is finally concluded. I contact you because Peter Leeming tells me that your office is offering a deal in which I, Ed Fry, would dismiss my appeal and your office would release me from any further jail time. This offer, however, is extended only to me, and it leaves Mr. Johnson subject to several more months in jail if we lose his appeal. As indicated earlier, Mr. Johnson and I were both motivated to sleep outside the courthouse to exercise our free speech rights and express our outrage at the way homeless people are deprived of sleep and treated like untouchables. As I pointed out in my opening brief to Judge Gallagher, the United States Supreme Court stated that such protest sleeping can be considered expressive activity protected by the First Amendment. Mr. Johnson slept out more nights than anyone else did, but that is no reason to punish him with a long jail sentence while I am allowed to go free. In view of the extremely broad prosecutorial discretion you wield, as exemplified by your offer to me, which apparently overrides the judge's sentencing power, I would accept your offer, but only if your office formally acknowledges the following in writing. 1. The California judiciary has officially stated that sleep deprivation attacks a person's physical and mental health in re ICORN. See my opening brief. 2. There are fewer than 200 shelter beds available in this county, and we have more than 2,700 homeless people in this county. 3. The County Health Services Agency has a statutory duty to protect the health of indigent residents. These and other related documents, or post documents in support of this, on his website, fullspectrumdemocracy.org. Your office would therefore recommend to the Health Services Agency that the county establish a centrally located county property complete with a mobile lavatory, we had one at Camp Peace Camp 2010 for less than $100 a month, for people to sleep outdoors. The property will be occupied only from 8 p.m. to 8 a.m. every day. We have recommended the lawn between the county government center and the lawn bowling facility. Government can only honor a person's right to sleep if it designates a place where people can congregate and sleep together safely. 4. The California Constitution expressly provides the right to pursue and obtain happiness, safety, and privacy. 5. The Ninth Amendment within the Bill of Rights states that the enumeration of certain rights in the Constitution shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. 6. Our government's treatment of people that have no house violates the inherent dignity of every human being, which is set forth in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. And I'm running out of time here. 7. In light of these and other protections provided by our highest laws, your office would agree to join with the defense in Mr. Johnson's appeal and urge the appellate court to strike down this vague and oppressive unlawful lodging statute, and would advise the sheriff that you will not be prosecuting any law that prohibits any person from sleeping in any place where it causes no inconvenience to others. Further, you will urge the Santa Cruz City Attorney to do likewise. And 8. Your office will urge the Superior Court to lift and expunge all existing warrants and convictions based on alleged Penal Code 647E violations. And Ed Fry's letter continues, but I'm running out of time. And coming up next, of course, is From the Cream to the Dregs, and that is a different kettle of fish. But I will be back on Sunday morning at 9:30, and probably will read some more from this letter. Maybe I'll have Ed Fry on himself to talk about these issues. And, of course, here we have smart meter opponent Uncle Dennis will be giving you all the details.
Smart meters are a smart thing.
There you go. Maybe he's actually a supporter. I'm not quite sure what Uncle Dennis's position is on this, but he'll tell you, perhaps.
I'm opposed to smart meters because of all the meter readers he's putting out of this.
There you go. Uncle Dennis, you see, he cuts through the fat to get to the heart of the issue. You can always count on Dennis to do that on his
put
show.
Your meter readers. Smash your smart meter.
Again, I don't mean to take Uncle Dennis too seriously. After all, we are not interested in having a federal indictment at this time, but perhaps...
Robert, what the hell is a federal indictment?
I
2 weeks in jail.
I won't comment on that, but I'll allow you to comment at length because I can't stop you. Your show is coming up. We got 3 hours of Uncle Dennis from the Cream to the Dregs rolling at you, so stay tuned for that. If you want to get in touch with me about anything you've heard, anything you may have questions about, perhaps to make some of the kind of acrid and sarcastic comments that you're hearing from Uncle Dennis and his boozy show. I see he's whipping out the ale here. You can give me a call at 423-HUFF,
423-4833.
Dennis, have you been drinking again?
I drink all the time.
There you are. I think this may be the sheriff calling in. Let's see if we can do something about this. Hi there, you're on Free Radio, the closing moments of Uncle Robert's show here.
Well, I entirely risk.
Oh, I'm going to turn you over to Uncle Dennis. Here's a caller for you.
Entirely different kettle of fish.
Hello, caller.
Yes, I'm your fan from Los Angeles, and this guy said that your show is an entirely different kettle of fish.
Yes, it's smellier.
Well, you know, what happened that we are all of the same humanity? What are these fissures? Splitting body politics. Does this man know what he's talking about?
You'll have to listen to his show to see if...
Well, I have listened long. I believe that he does not know what he's talking about.
Well, you'll have to take that up with Robert. He'll be back Sunday morning at
7:30. I'm not going to talk to him on Sunday morning or even Monday morning. He has to get his act together and rise up to the occasion.
You know what they say about old bread...
Tell me.
It won't rise.
All right. Well, okay, Uncle Dennis, maybe I'll call you later on to sew up this whole messy affair.
Well, I don't know. You can talk to me now or you can talk to me later.
I watched this movie today, 1969, called Satan's Sadist.
Yeah?
And it was about... a Vietnam veteran against Hell's Angels.
Yeah, who won?
The vet. In fact, he said that when he killed people in Vietnam, at least he got paid for it.
Yeah.
Well, so anyway, Uncle Dennis, we are in this social, economic, cultural maelstrom. And I wish you well, and I'm going to listen to your music.
Well, good. Here's some music.
Okay. Thank you. Bye.